This is a podcast from JUF.org.
Tel Aviv-born Pinchas Zukerman is one of the world's preeminent violinists. He also plays viola and conducts, and has served as the music director for several orchestras and festivals. He'll be hosted by the Music Institute of Chicago the weekend of May 20th and 21st at Nicholas Concert Hall. He will also conduct a master class, which is open to the public, and receive the prestigious Dushkin Award at the Music Institute's annual gala, and perform with his own trio. Shalom, Mr. Zukerman.
Hello, how are you?
Good, how are you?
Fine, thank you.
Where am I reaching you?
I'm in Nashville.
Oh, my goodness. What's the occasion?
I'm a guest conductor and soloist here with the orchestra this week. We had our first concert yesterday, one tonight, and then another one tomorrow night.
Okay. What can you tell us about your coming to Chicago in May?
Well, before Chicago, on Sunday, I leave here very, very crack of dawn. I go to New York and I pick up Amanda and we are off to Italy. We have four concerts with the Royal Philharmonic in Italy and in London. And once we finish in London on the 26th or so, we then fly to Korea.
Wow.
And we spend a week in Korea and then Amanda comes back home to New York and I go to China. On a tour with the Pacific Symphony.
Oh, my goodness.
From Orange County, and I'll be back home around the 16th. And then we come to you, and we also play in Detroit for the Chamber Music Society there. And then I play with Mr. Perlman in Washington on the 23rd. And then I have, believe it or not, a week off or so, and I'm going up back to Ottawa to do my Summer Music Institute, which we started some 20 years ago.
It's your vacation.
I'm a music director. So that's just the next... 6 weeks.
that's your vacation. You get to go teach instead of playing.
Yeah, right.
That's your relaxation. I was going to start by saying that I'm biased towards you because my Hebrew name is also Pinchas. How often do you meet someone else with our name?
Ah, that's a good one. I don't know. I can't remember right now.
With your name,
but I'm sure they're around.
I imagine the name is most common in Israel, where you were born. How often do you get back there?
Oh, quite a lot.
Yeah.
I was there back in January. Amanda and I were there 6 months earlier, back in July. And then next year I'll be going once, possibly twice. You know, we now have a new music director just appointed, Lahav Shani. He's fabulous. He's 29 and he's a product of Israel, and he's a great, great, great talent.
That's wonderful.
So that's a wonderful continuation of the tradition and being a complete and absolute product in the conducting field to take over this orchestra after Mr. Mehta.
Sure.
First of all, of course, an extraordinary thing for Lahav to be able to fill in those shoes.
Wow.
But it's also wonderful for the country, wonderful for the organization. And I can tell you, Zubin is very happy that has happened.
Sure.
And not only Zubin, but a lot of us, of course.
And how long was Mr. Mehta in that position?
50 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Amazing. 50 years.
50 years. My whole life, actually. as it happened. So he had one job, and I had everything that I did in that amount of time. So, again, once you come to Chicago, do you know at this point what you're going to be performing? I know you're going to be with the trio and doing a master class. So do you know what you have so many, like you said, so many concerts coming up. I don't imagine you can keep everything in your head, what you're going to be playing.
You know, I've done this for a very long time.
Uh-huh.
This is nothing all that special, so to speak. In other words, it's not overburdened because that's all I've been doing all my life. I've been playing chamber music. I've been playing solo. I've been conducting, teaching for the last 25, almost 30 years now.
Uh-huh.
In different places. When we have festivals, we usually are connected. I always bring some kind of education component to it.
Mm-hmm.
So it's nothing new. It's only grown somewhat because now I do quite a bit of a lot more traveling since I'm not sitting put in one position, so to speak, for 10, 12 weeks. So I really bring this to Adelaide, or bring it to London, I bring it to whatever. And there are some people that help, of course, a very good group of wonderful people that can organize and help each other. it's still the necessity for more education, music education.
Oh, absolutely. Obvious.
I mean, it's more and more so in the last 10 or 15 years. It's coming back. It's coming back more and more on a local level.
That's good.
In places you never would think. For example, in Arkansas.
Okay.
So these are very good young, give or take, you know, between 30 and 50 educators mm-hmm. that are working with high schools and some pre-high school,
right.
Grammar school. So these are all good things that are taking place again. I think we've realized that some of the states have realized that, at least in America, we need to bring music back to the schools, and they're doing it. So that's really very helpful and very, very encouraging to me because I've been fighting for this for years and years and years. I mean, listen, you expect the UCLAs and the USC and Stanford and so on and Manhattan School and Juilliard and all these places, of course, to continue their programs. We are now very much connected to many organizations, are connected to China. China has a plethora of unbelievable amount of people with talent that play instruments, somewhere between 40 and 50 million people. And so it's very important that we bring the best value system to those places. And that's what it's about, to continue the tradition.
I was going to ask you about that. You talked about certain groups of people that are very talented. To me, when I think of classical violin, and you're certainly included in this group, I think of Menuhin and Heifetz all the way to Gil Shechem and Joshua Bell. It's a very Jewish tradition, actually.
It has been.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very clear why. We had to make a living. It's very simple. No, I'm serious. It's not a... My music was always part of the family. It was also true in the Austro-Hungarian families during the late 1800s. Mm-hmm. It was true, of course, in Russia, France. The Belgian school of violin playing. It didn't come from the air. Eyes came from the Spores and the Wieniawski. Poland was and still is, and it's back again with a tremendous amount of music. And a lot of it is to do with the violin. So it is ongoing. It's spread somewhat more because, frankly, it's much easier to travel today. You go a half an hour to an airport and you can fly 14 hours to the other side of the world. So these are issues that are still very new, in a way, in the whole tradition of how music is how you evolve as a musician and how the community brings music to their places. These are very still very, very raw kind of new aspects to society. We still, of course, see the centers, big centers, that the Viennas and the Berlins and the Frankfurts and the Paris and the Londons and the New Yorks and so on. Chicago, of course, with all the tradition, Detroit and St. Louis. But it all came from Middle European traditions. From the last 200 to 300 years, because that's where it came from. It's that simple,
No, you can trace it.
And paintings and sculpture came from Italy,
Right.
It traveled. So, but now, if you told me 40 years ago, 30 years ago, that Beijing will have one of the biggest conservatories, that Harbin would have 1,500, 2,000 people in the conservatory, that Shanghai would have Hangzhou, et cetera, I would laugh at you. but look, that's what's happening.
It
so.
Is.
And we're seeing that. We're seeing it from Korea. Tremendous. My first real meeting with Asian kids was in Meadowmount in the summer camp that Galamian had. I met Kiang Wah and his sister, the cello, and I met two very wonderful fiddle players from Japan. And Young-uk. Young-uk came also from Korea. So there were five Asian kids in 1962-3.
Right.
My God, it's about 5,000 now. So, yeah, and that's good. That's all wonderful. And they're all so eager and want to. And we see it happening more and more in our professional field, so to speak, in the Chicago Symphonies and so on, New York Philharmonics. We see a plethora now of Asian fabulous players. And I mean, look at in your own neighborhood, you got Lee Kuo. Lee Kuo is principal of viola, has been for over 30 years now in the Chicago Symphony. Mm-hmm. And he comes from Shanghai, for goodness sake. And the reason he comes from Shanghai to America is because during the revolution, his parents were taken into a village. They were not sent to hard labor because they were, quote, special.
Okay.
Does that ring a bell? Oh, my God, does it ever ring a bell? So, and he was 14, and he was given an opportunity to study in Beijing because he was, quote, special.
Mm-hmm.
So they were saved, in a way, by the regime. And look what's happened. So it's all amazing how it's not coincidence. It's not so, you know, that's not an accident that the people play music and play it very well. It comes from an extraordinary place, and each one has a story behind it, you know, of the privation of the human soul. And the way we provide comfort is by playing and singing and doing extraordinary things with the art form called music.
I agree. I think it's, I was talking with your wife Amanda earlier this morning, and we talked about how music can transcend borders.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Except if you build walls. If you build walls, it's going to create more holes.
Uh-huh.
And I wish to God that would stop. And I mean stop yesterday, including my own birthplace, which is Israel. It's enough. We need to really open those things, because you build walls and you create more holes in society. That's got to stop. We've got to somehow bring some sanity to our governing people. It's crazy. All over. It's not just here.
Mm-hmm.
We have such extraordinary problems without building walls. We have the deprivation of 52 or so countries in Africa. They have no food, you know. What the hell are we doing about that? I mean, yes, a lot is being done, but not enough, because we're so preoccupied by creating these unbelievable, huge, big elements that divide us rather than unite us. And that's terrible. Is just terrible.
I think what happens is people focus on the differences, but I think one of the lessons of, say, an ensemble, even a trio, or even something as large as an orchestra, is each instrument is different and has a different voice, but together they play in harmony, and each one has a thing to contribute to that harmony.
Absolutely. We are a community. Mm-hmm. There's a community on stage that plays music. It can be three people, it can be five, it can be 500, and there's a community listening, which is called the audience.
Right.
But it's not only in concert halls. It can be out in parks. It could be outdoors. It could be in stadiums, which we're doing now with wonderful sound systems.
Wow.
So that's an improvement to a great extent to bring music to a much larger scale of people in one given evening. But that's not good enough. We need to go beyond that and start looking at all the educational aspects again, as we used to back in the early 1900s.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm beginning to see the mushrooming of communities really bringing music back to the public schools, to the private schools, to the colleges, the youth orchestras, all over. And that's very encouraging.
It is. Speaking of education, you yourself studied under Isaac Stern.
Not exactly.
No?
I didn't study formally with him. I studied with Galamian.
I see.
I used to see him every so often when he came back into town. If he had a minute, I'd get a phone call and I'd go and play, but it wouldn't be that much. As I got a little older, 2-3 years into my education at Juilliard, I did spend a little more time with him. I went to Connecticut for a journey, you know, for a few weeks to his house, and that's when, and one summer, and then I went to a little bit in Meadowbrook. He started a program there with his trio, with Lenny Rose and Lee Stoneman in 66. And then slowly but surely I grew up, and we started to play together. But during my years of study with Galamian, if I saw him a couple of times a year, that would be
a
lot, 2 or 3 times a year. But that's plenty.
Yes.
'Cause my real teaching was Galamian. That's the real pedagogue.
Okay. When did you also start to play viola as well as the violin?
I was 15 in Middlemount, in the summer school Galamian had. Mr. Gingold, Joseph Gingold, a great violinist, teacher, educator, concert master, you know, amazing man. he one day said to me, come on, play the viola. So I said, okay. I picked it up, and I said, yeah, but Mr. Gingold, I can't read the clef. He said, let me show you. And that's it. The rest is history.
When do you choose to go with the viola instead? What does it say that's different from what the violin can say on a musical level?
Oh, I don't know. Oh. You know, there's no real answer to these things. The answer is, I play music.
Okay.
And sometimes it's a fifth lower and sometimes it's a fifth higher, which is what the violin is. And okay. So, and I make music, German music, and I also conduct and I do all of this. You know, I'm a music person that does elements of all the possible outputs. I try to do as much variety and give each one my utmost to make it right. And if it doesn't work, I stop. But most of the time it works. So, you know, with new music, with pieces written for me, and it just keeps going. And I hope it'll go on for quite a while still. Because I'm feeling pretty good.
That's good.
Physically, I feel good. Mentally, I see some new things around the world now that I've been traveling again, much more than I did for the last 17 years or so when I was in Ottawa. So it's exciting. And to do it together with a mate, you know, a wife that plays unbelievably beautiful and an incredible critic, she doesn't let one single thing go by.
Oh, no.
And that's very, very encouraging to me because I have a pair of ears second to none. And that's wonderful.
It is.
And to experience things together and with food and friends and all kinds of stuff. And it's great.
How did you meet her?
We met in Calgary.
Okay.
She was principal in Calgary. I went to do a guest appearance there, conducting and playing. She was principal. And then I saw this incredible cellist, and I remembered her, but then in 97, she got the job in Ottawa as principal, and I remember her there because I was there coincidentally. She was doing a week, I think, of auditioning for the orchestra, and she got the job immediately, but that was way before I even thought of going there. So, and then when I got there, I mean, I heard that she's there, and we didn't really actually get together for at least 6 or 7 months after I got to Ottawa. So she had been there before, already ensconced in a position, and that's when we met again, and we somehow hit it off.
Well, you had a lot in common. I mean, that's something for sure.
Yeah, we sure do.
So you talk about trying new things. What led you to the decision to try conducting?
Conducting was an extension I started back at school at Juilliard. I was about 16 and a half, and during that winter, when I was 16, I decided that I needed to look at what this conducting is about. So I took some lessons, some classes at the school, conducting one, conducting two, three, for about 3 months or so. And I was very, very, I was always fascinated by the other side. In other words, I started playing chamber music of all sorts back in Holon, where I live, with my teacher, Ilona. We played a couple of times a week sometimes, besides learning all the solo stuff, all the Paganinis and the Vinyaskis and all those things.
Right.
I was always fascinated by the harmony, by how the structure works of music. So for me, in some sense, that now, in retrospect, was an extension. The conducting was just another way of forming oneself as a musician, because there's such a plethora and incredible wealth of music that you could never do as a player. As a conductor, you've got opera, you've got serenades, you've got symphonies, you've got everything. I mean, that the orchestra is the complete instrument. I play a single line instrument.
Right.
So I needed that, and I wanted that. And I had a physical affinity for it, which I thought only 2 or 3 years later, when I started working with the English Chamber Orchestra. This was 66, 67. Uh-huh. By 70 or so, I was beginning to direct with the violin. A couple of years into that journey with the English Chamber Orchestra, they asked me if I would do some conducting without the violin. I began to learn scores. mark score, mark parts.
Right.
And I began to get very serious about it.
Oh.
And one thing led to the other. And that's a growth that took place as a person as well as a musician. And the rest, you know, is just ongoing. It's not, it's a library of, it's a wealth, it's a garden, it's incredible flowers and greens and vegetables and what have you.
Right.
When you're standing on a podium, right. It's amazing.
Yeah.
And now it's 35 years and I still am learning how to do it better and better every time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what it's about. It's like when you pick up the violin every day, you practice your scales. I pick up the scores.
Right.
I learned the alphabet, so to speak,
right.
by going back to the parts, marking parts as conductor.
Mm-hmm.
I've given some classes, of course, not directly, but indirectly as conductor as well. So it's all one. It's all one thing. It's not divided up. It looks like it's divided up,
right.
but it's not. It's one thing.
Right. Well, you have a lot of actors who become directors, for example.
I beg your pardon?
You have actors who become directors.
Director is just part of something that you do as a conductor. I don't know if I'll ever be a director again, a music director. It's too much time consumed by meetings.
Oh.
I don't particularly enjoy that.
Oh, I'm sorry. I was going to ask you about that because you've done so much of it, but you're moving away from that.
It's enough.
Right.
because I've done enough of it, it's enough.
But you still teach.
Oh, the teaching is separate. Yeah, yeah, it has nothing to do with meetings.
Where are you teaching now? How many different places?
I have been teaching in Manhattan for 25 years.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had a seminar in Cologne. We started I teach with the most fabulous woman that happens to be also a friend for many years, Petinka Kopek. She's a phenomenal pedagogue. She studied at Juilliard as well. She comes from Czechoslovakia originally, through Israel. But we didn't know each other in Israel. We only met in America.
Mm.
She's a phenomenal teacher. And so we've started in Cologne. We had some classes in South America. We had classes in Czechoslovakia. We've had classes all over the place, in Europe.
Mm.
So, yeah, you know, it's but the real the one place that you can call studio that we have is called the Zuckerman Performance Program at the Manhattan School.
Okay.
And that's about 25 years now. And we've done about, over the 25 years, we've had up to 8 kids every 3 years, 2 to 4 years, people graduate and we take new ones. We've had hundreds of them, and we've gotten very good results. Teachers and good soloists and wonderful people, orchestral players, of course.
Well, it's got to be very gratifying for you to be able to be part of that chain of passing down the tradition.
Well, in a way, I've always thought that was my mission.
Mm-hmm.
I was given that opportunity by some extraordinary icons of the 20th century in music.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just continuing this, what I learned from them, that's all.
Okay.
I copy.
Well, all the greats do. Aside from all this, you also have your own trio. Talk to me about the trio and about how that started.
Well, it started out of the chamber players. We had a quintet, two viola quintet, which for about 8 or 9 years, while Amanda and I were both in Ottawa, we took a couple of the players, two former students of mine, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
And both are in first chair positions, violin and viola, wonderful players. And we added accordingly, a piano, or we added another viola, or sometimes another cello, so we would be a sextet, string sextet.
Mm-hmm.
And before you knew it, Angela became part of the group.
Mm-hmm.
And as we were leaving, things got a little cumbersome as far as time element, free time for the players from the orchestra.
Right.
It's just we couldn't just do concerts on the weekends.
Right.
Because we were all basically in the same place, so we could travel for a Saturday or Sunday concert, and sometimes in the middle of a week if it wasn't too far from Ottawa. And we did some major touring in South America. We went all over the place. And we did some wonderful playing all over, some recordings. So it's But that had to kind of, at the moment, it's put to a halt because they're busy. They don't have the ability to get out of the orchestra, and we can't wait for that. So
right.
Angela grew out of that because we then began to play trios, and before you knew it, we said, okay, let's call it the Zuckerman Trio. They called it the Zuckerman Trio. I didn't think they should call it the Zuckerman Trio, but they said, hey, you know, that's what we're going to call it. I said, okay, ladies. And what's, in a way, what's interesting also is they both come from the same place, you know, Edmonton.
Oh.
And I think the foundation that sponsored Angela, she was the first one to receive scholarship.
Wow.
And then Amanda was the second one there from Edmonton. And the third was Jessica Linnebach, which happened to be a student of mine, but also became second violin. She played second violin in the group. She's now associate concertmaster in Ottawa. So there's a chain of events here that takes place. It's like generation after generation. So it's kind of rewarding to see all that, you know, all stick together.
I can imagine. Aside from classical music, what other modes do you enjoy? Do you enjoy listening to or enjoy playing? What other genres?
I'm a complete and absolute music fanatic, classical music fanatic. I don't really go into any other genre, even though I will go and listen to my daughter play the guitar in her little nightclubs and things all over, because she's fantastic at
it. Sure.
In fact, she's been to North Shore many times in different clubs.
What's her name?
Natalia Zuckerman.
Okay.
And she's wonderful. And my other daughter is a soprano. You know, in the opera and classical field, and so, and teaches as well. So I don't spread myself anywhere except with learning more about where I come from, which is classical music.
Okay.
And I never thought of anything else, frankly. Mm-hmm. I wanted to be at one time a tennis player. I thought I could maybe become better than I was, and I used to play quite a bit back in the early 70s, maybe for about 6 or 7 years.
Really?
I used to travel with a racket. I used to go right to the courts from the airport.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I was a fanatic because I thought, one day maybe I'll be able to play with Jimmy Connors. But
right.
Guess what? It never happened.
Uh-huh.
And you know why? Because I didn't have the legs for it.
But
I love the sport, and I really did a lot of that.
Yeah.
And so sports is still my one thing. I love football, what we call soccer here.
Right.
You know, the great Pele and all these extraordinary people who play the game.
Well, it's huge now. I mean, even
so,
in America,
you know, I do that. Sports, I love baseball.
Uh-huh.
I love the whole idea of that competitive spirit of being pitcher and batter.
Right.
It's amazing. So, you know, these are elements. I love good food, and I love wonderful wines. So, and I share it with all my friends and my family.
Do you cook?
Nah, I wouldn't call it cook, no. When I'm alone, I take all that's left over. Sometimes I will make a good spaghetti because Amanda will come home. She says, that's good. So, but no, I don't really. I'm not a chef, not at all. But I do like and listen to the ingredients that go in. Amanda's a damn good, she's become a very good cook.
Oh, that's
she won't admit it, but she's very, very good. Her mom is, of course, an extraordinary chef. She's actually an extraordinary chef.
Really?
So, yeah, not professionally, but very, very deep in thought about ingredients and fresh stuff.
Well, as long as you don't starve, that's the important thing.
Starve? God, no. I need to lose some weight. That would be good.
I love this. It seems unfair to ask this question after all you have done, but are there other musical mountains you'd still like to climb? Do you have any
mountains?
What are your next ambitions? What's your next challenge?
And listen, I have never thought that way.
Okay.
I've always taken strides in trying to open up more informational aspects of my musical knowledge. And frankly, it's not that hard. What I try to teach is... what I try to teach the kids that I teach is a process of listening. That's very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And it once you start doing left side, right side of the brain in listening process, you open up the ability to look and listen and see. Well, look and see is the same, and listen in a different way, in a much more acute and intelligent way. And that part of it comes, of course, with more time on the earth, getting more experiences, seeing more, hearing more, being part of society in different parts of the world. You know, when we go to Brazil, for example, we don't just go to the hotel.
Okay.
You know, we don't just go to the Copacabana and stay in the room and then go for a walk on the beach. We have friends all over. We go to look at museums. We travel to the Hermitage. We've been a bunch of times in Petersburg because that's what life is about, is the old, wonderful, incredible work of art in all aspects. When we go, I can assure you now that we're going to Italy, we're not going to be sitting around looking out the window. We're going to be looking at all kinds of new and wonderful that we've seen before, possibly.
Right.
Buildings and art, and look for maybe a performance at the Scala in Milano of an opera. If it's the right cast, if it's the right opera, we'll probably go. It's that kind of thing that one does in order to become and be and maintain the ability to think in a much higher form.
Sure.
And all of that somehow translates back to what you do on the stage when you're performing. And that's something that I think people need to, when I teach, I know when Amanda teaches. See, for example, we're going to Korea. You know what? We're not just playing and working with an orchestra. We're also teaching, you know. I'm going to London. I'm doing a class in London just the day before we play in London. So it's an ongoing process of, you ask me, where do I teach? Everywhere. The problem we have with all that, in some cases, is you want to continue. You want to maintain a relationship. And that's been hard.
Right.
Time element, distances. But we have now technology that is helping us. The same technology called FaceTime is now something I started in 94 when I first saw video conferencing at that time. It blew my mind. And I think, personally, I have to tell you personally, I can tell you that in the next 5 to 10 years, there are going to be performances all over the place by technology. IT is extremely fast in growing into our daily routine. I'm not talking about just internet. I'm talking about real seeing and hearing and informational things that are extraordinary. We have music today. But just take one example, streaming, for example.
Right.
We're getting more and more streaming of all kinds of performances, opera, theater, music. Sooner or later, you're going to see it out in the streets. There's no question about it. You're going to see it in subways. You're going to see it in buses. Because it's Bluetooth, you know. You don't need wires.
Nope.
And it's going to resolve some issues, I hope, in people's minds today. That, oh, my God, you can't hear music on a little screen. What are you talking about?
Right.
Why not? You know, you have little earphones in your ear when you're listening to music, so why can't you look at the same time on the picture? And the pictures are damn good. They're all digitalized.
Amazing.
And if you just look at what's happened to the digital world in respect to medicine, for example, it's incredible the strides forward we've made in finding and trying to resolve some major, major problems in cells. And I mean, 25 years ago, people were beginning to talk about cell reproductions and all kinds of stuff like that in laboratories only. And it took forever. With a rabbit here and a rabbit there and all kinds of little things that they would do in order to make the human a better person and live longer and better. Well, today it's a given. I mean, it's a 3D is already, and it's getting better and better and better. And I can tell you, Israel right now is at the highest possible level of IT reproduction or IT learnings that anywhere in the world. And in fact, I have a former student, viola player, that is now working at Technion. And so, and he's developed some amazing things already with a group of people. They're phenomenal, just phenomenal. And I said, so, Tom, are you playing? He said, of course I'm playing. So, you know, it's all part of the same thing. It's when a person is good and a person can do things and they find their ways, usually music is part of their life.
I agree.
Either as practitioner or listener or just an avid lover of music, of sound, because that's what it's about. It's like light, you know. Light is very important. Without light, we can't survive. So, and water, of course, which we need to do more of. We'll get to it. I think we're working on it. We need to do more of it faster and develop it faster because the population growth is amazing. By 2060, we're going to have 9 billion people.
Oh, my goodness.
That's a lot of people.
It is.
So we better start looking at all this, and I think they are.
They are.
Yeah.
I think people, forward-thinking people, you know, are looking into some of these things. Well, it has been a tremendous honor and pleasure to speak with you today, and you've given me well more than half an hour of your time now. So I feel
good. I'm glad you have it on tape, so to speak.
Yes. Right. Well, this is a piece of technology.
Take care of yourself.
Right here.
See you there. See you in Chicago in a
few
weeks.
I'd love to. Yes.
Okay. Okay. Wonderful. Well,
thank you so much.
Take care. Thank you. Bye.
This has been a podcast from the Jewish United Fund, Jewish Federation of Metropolitan Chicago. For more information, visit juf.org.